washes over me. I can't imagine driving in this weather. This area isn't supposed to be prone to snow like this. I feel like stomping my feet like a toddler, that my first winter in the DC area is the worst they've seen in years. We dash over to the SUV that waits at the curb. When Andy opens the front passenger door, I'm just as shocked to see the woman driver as she is to see me. "Hi," she says, as Andy ushers me to sit in the front. I recognize the blonde ponytail the woman sports. I can't be sure it's the same nurse as the one I caught kissing him, but she does have on scrubs. Andy climbs in the back.
"Thanks for the ride, Becca."
"Yeah, sure. I was on the phone with Stacy when you called in. Since I drove right by your place, I offered to pick you up."
"Becca, this is my girlfriend, Kate. Kate, this is Becca. She's a nurse in the oncology unit."
"Girlfriend?" She says the word under her breath. I'm not sure she even realizes she said it out loud. "Nice to meet you," she says with a cheery smile I can tell is forced. She holds out her hand, and for a second, I'm tempted to pull a Mitch. Then again, I'm not positive she's the nurse that's been hitting on Andy. She could be another nurse interested in him, and could I blame her? "You too," I say, giving her a genuine smile and shake her hand briskly. When it's obvious no one is going to talk, she turns on the radio. A song I recognize is playing. As I hum with the song, Becca maintains a white-knuckle grip on the steering wheel. I wonder if it's because the roads are snow-covered and slick, or if she's grief-stricken to find out Andy's off the market. I'll keep on wondering, because there is no way I'm going to ask. The hospital isn't far. When she parks, an older Nick Jonas song, Jealous, starts to play. It's almost funny how fast she turns the car off, killing the song mid-sentence. Andy takes my hand as we walk into the building. He tries to be nice and make small talk with Becca, but her clipped answers are indication enough she's not happy. When we reach the ward, Becca takes off her jacket and introduces me to the other nurses sitting at the station. "Hey, everyone. This is Doc Drew's girlfriend, Kate." I get a few smiles. A few others trade glances between Becca and me. I'm starting to wonder if Becca is a former girlfriend or fling of Andy's. She does know where he lives.
"Weren't you here earlier, Doc?"
A male nurse with dark hair and a round face asks, easing the tension and cutting off my thoughts.
"Yes, I'm back to see Tasha. Her mom wasn't here earlier and has asked to speak to me."
He lays his coat on a chair and steps back over to me.
"Well, aren't you nice? Must be the Southern upbringing. Doc Chad, the ass, would never come back in for a patient."
The other nurses laugh at the guy's comment. Andy shakes his head and steers me away from the station.
"I shouldn't be long."
We walk down a hall that isn't as sterile looking as the hospitals I've been in. The walls are paneled in a medium wood grain color and have colorful pictures of puppies and kittens on them, making the place look much more cheerful than it is. The glass fronts of patient rooms are bright with hanging blinds that can be opened or closed for privacy. The hallway is large and there are only rooms on the one side.
"Wait right here."
We stop on the opposite wall from a room where a little girl lies in bed. "Tasha" is written on a whiteboard outside her room. I nod and try to breathe through the anxiety. It all rushes back to me, despite how everything looks different. "Doc Drew," a nurse calls before he can enter the room. Her hair is blonde and swings around her shoulders as she bounces over to him. "I thought I wouldn't get to see you today. When I heard you came back, I had to come up to see you." She reaches out, but he holds out a hand and steps back. His face shifts, and he almost looks angry.
"You have to stop, or I'm going to go to human resources again. I'm not interested. My girlfriend over there can attest to that if you need to hear it from someone else."
Andy points at me, and I straighten. So this is the girl I saw kissing him. Then who is Becca? Her hands fall to her sides. "Fine. You don't know what you're missing." She spins on her nurse's shoes, and they squeak in protest. She clomps off, and Andy glances up at me and shrugs. I give him a thumbs up, and he smiles a little. He glances away from me when a little girl tugs on his lab coat. He kneels down to be at her eye level. I'm given a clear view of the small, pretty girl with brown skin and a bald head. She has a pink headband on with a bow. She looks so tiny compared to the IV pole she walks with.
Doc Drew, she says in a tiny voice. They shaved off the rest of my hair. Do you like it?
Andy's smile couldn't have been bigger. He reaches up and touches the side of her face.
You are beautiful.
Her baldness is another reminder of how Andy is so much stronger than I am. He's ready to slay the cancer dragon, while I'm ready to be consumed by its fire. Her eyes dip.
You think so, even without my hair?
His finger gently lifts her chin.
Absolutely.
Then he leans in and whispers something in her ear. She smiles, but it doesn't exactly reach her eyes.
Is your mom around?
She nods.
She went to get something to eat.
Her face changes immediately.
I'm not feeling so well.
Let's see what we can do about that.
He picks her up like he's her knight in shiny armor. It's hard for me to stop the tears from spilling over that well up in my eyes. He carries her in one arm and pushes the pole with his free hand. Just as he lays her down, she tosses her cookies all over him and the bed. He doesn't look disgusted at all. The fact is, he never even blinks or misses a beat. He calmly reaches for a plastic basin on the side of the bed and holds her while she finishes vomiting. Two nurses come jogging over. One has fresh linens, and the other takes the girl from Andy while they remake the bed and get her cleaned up. He doesn't leave her, though. He continues to talk to her with what can only be reassuring words. I can't hear them, but the way he looks at her is telling. As they tuck her back in bed, he discreetly takes off his soiled lab coat and rolls it up. He unclips his ID credentials and takes everything out of his pockets before shoving the dirty thing into the linen cart someone brings in. Then he sits in bed with the girl and talks to her until her mother comes in. The nurses have left, and the mother isn't the wiser. I have a feeling Andy won't say anything to the mother about it in front of the little girl. I know I've hit the nail when I see him hold up a finger to her and walk out with the mother. They talk quietly near the door, and I feel like an intruder. Andy speaks softly, probably out of respect for patient privacy, and so the little girl can't hear him. The mother speaks a little louder, enough so I can hear part of her side of the conversation. She's concerned that the girl can't keep any food down, and wasn't the medication not supposed to make her little girl sick? I want to tell her there are no absolutes in medicine. I knew that firsthand. Everyone is different and responds differently. I only hope Andy can give the girl the miracle it appears she needs. He goes back in and talks to Tasha some more before he finally comes back to me.
We can go now.
Tasha's situation tugs at my heart. I know I shouldn't ask, but I do anyway. How bad is she? He places a hand on my back and guides me away from the rooms. Becca and the male nurse are the only ones at the station when we walk up.
See you, Doc.
The guy waves. Andy grabs his coat and waves. Becca says nothing. I want to ask about her, but I find myself needing answers about Tasha.
You know how things are, Kate. We thought we beat it, and we're doing our best for her.
He doesn't get into details due to patient confidentiality. He trails off, and I'm left feeling my heart will crush inside my chest. I need to change the subject. Is there something between you and Becca?
Jealous?
He asks, turning a charming smile on me, but I don't cave. He sighs.
I made a mistake when I first came to work here.
I'm not sure I want to hear the rest, considering how he begins this tale.
She had the SUV. I had some boxes shipped to me. She offered to help me pick them up. Mitch and Dave lived in D.C. She was here. I accepted and offered her dinner as payment for her help. She thought maybe I was interested. I told her I didn't date anyone where I worked. I think she's held out hope I might change my mind. Now she knows I won't.
A nod at his clinical assessment. At least he realized she was still into him. Some guys act clueless. I can't be mad at her. Not only is Andy amazing to look at, but he's a single doctor, thus a catch. If I continue to be with him, I'll have to curb the jealousy because he will always get hit on. When we get to his car, I change the subject yet again. Why don't you have a four-wheel drive? Considering his job, it seemed like a good question. He's buckling his seatbelt when he says,
Never needed it in Charleston, and I haven't decided if I'm staying.
Oh, I say, remembering he's here temporarily.
Hey,
he says, gaining my attention. I realize I'm picking at a chip on my nail. I need a file, or it will break off. I glance up and meet his eyes.
It looks like I might have an opportunity to stay in the area.
He pauses to let that sink in.
I want to make this work with you. I'm leaning towards staying here because of you.
He takes my hand and kisses my knuckles. Then we are driving back to his place. We don't talk, and I think about what he says. I hope you'll stay. Not only for me, but for you too. I say finally when he parks the car after a precarious drive back. He smiles and leans over to kiss me.
That's good to hear. And this is a great opportunity, so I would stay for all the right reasons.
We stay in bed for the rest of the day, before Mitch shows up late. I got a text earlier that my office is closed the next day, so I snuggle in for the night. However, Andy's office is open the next day. Apparently, D.C. got hit harder. In fact, I get a call from my mother that Charleston got some snow, too. Andy goes into the office early, but wants to come back at lunch to take me home. Mitch offered me a ride. I say into the phone.
Yeah, man, we're both headed to D.C.
Mitch calls out in the background.
Tell Mitch I can take care of my girl and to get his own.
I don't. Not yet, at least. He has a point. We're headed in the same direction.
I'm almost done. Please let me do this.
I agree, but he almost regrets that decision when they call for freezing rain later in the day. He beats the next storm to roll in while the roads are clear.
When will I see you again?
Saturday? I'm going out with Mandy tonight because I've been promising her for weeks.
Saturday works. I might hang out with Dave and Mitch tonight. Dave has news he wants to share. Maybe I'll call you and I can come over for breakfast.
He winks at our code word. I doubt I'll be out late with Mandy, so swing by when you're done having fun with the boys and spend the night with me. Then I'll make you breakfast. It's my turn to wink before I kiss him hard with a need I suddenly feel. I had him in bed most of yesterday, and now I must be spoiled.
It's killing me to leave you. You better go, or I'll have to cancel my afternoon appointments.
I kiss him quickly and hop out of the car with the biggest smile. However, the night with Mandy doesn't exactly go as planned. Chapter 24. Past. Graduation was yesterday. I'm officially done. I don't know how, but I attained 2 degrees and graduated summa cum laude with Drew watching me. My shining moment is having Drew here, not getting the dual degrees or the summa cum laude designation. Funny how your priorities change when life throws a wrecking ball at your carefully constructed plans.
I'm so proud of you,
Drew says as we put the last box in my car. I spent the last week packing up the apartment with Jenna. The move-in truck is full, and my dad just left. He and Jenna's dad are driving it back to South Carolina. Jenna and Ben are following Drew and me home. Drew has to fly back to Indy to finish his last 2 weeks there before he starts his fellowship at the Medical University of South Carolina in July. He'll have a month off because of our wedding. His department in Indy has been so awesome to him, I keep wondering if he should have stayed there for his fellowship. Too late now. Jenna walks out and asks, You ready?
Yep. Let me use the bathroom one more time.
When I come out, I take a look at our building. You know, I'm really gonna miss this place. Jenna comes up to me and throws her arm over my shoulder. Yeah, me too. It was a great apartment, and we were great roomies. We look at each other and start crying. Ben and Drew moan. One of them says,
Girls.
And I think it's Ben. Jenna yells out, Shut it. We are like peas and carrots. And we sob some more. We finally pull apart and head out of town. Drew's hand reaches for mine and he says,
Won't be long before we're headed on our honeymoon.
Yeah, and I wish someone would tell me where we're going. He laughs. He wants it to be a huge surprise, so I'm going with it. I look at him and marvel at how awesome he looks. Strong is the first word that comes to mind. He's working out again, and he looks every bit the same as when I met him. His hair has grown in, though it's not as long as he used to wear it, and it's a bit wavier.
Bathing suits, babe. All you need are bathing suits.
What? No nude beaches?
Probably, but I don't want anyone seeing your gorgeous body naked. So bathing suits.
I clap my hands together. I'm so excited. In just a few weeks, I'll be Kate McKnight.
Don't say another word, or I'll have to pull over so we can have a quickie.
I think I can help you out with that. I move to unzip his pants and take his semi-hard cock out.
Kate, it's broad daylight, and traffic isn't exactly sparse.
Just keep your eyes on the road, McKnight, and try to stay away from any 18-wheelers.
I don't believe you.
Say that in a few minutes. I wrap my mouth around his cock and go to town. There's just something sexy and a bit edgy about sucking your fiancé off on the interstate. I don't know why, but it sure turns me on. Drew moans, and one hand finds its way into my hair as he slightly pumps his hips up and down, fucking my mouth. I need to make this fast so he doesn't wreck. I do my best tongue swirling, mouth sucking, hand squeezing blowjob until Drew climaxes, groaning into the car pretty damn loud. After I lick him clean, I zip him back up and offer him a smile.
Damn, Kate.
He shakes his head.
That was great.
I notice he's white-knuckling the steering wheel. I aim to please.
Well, you did a little more than please. Shit.
He rubs his face. You okay there, honey? I laugh.
Fuck, I want to kiss you.
Sorry, a man's gotta drive. He looks straight ahead for a heartbeat, and then impishly says,
Yeah, but a man has a hand.
And he holds it up in the air and wiggles his fingers. It gets a giggle out of me.
Lose those shorts.
Suddenly, I'm thinking what he did. It's broad daylight and traffic is thick. He reads my mind.
Oh, no way are you getting out of this one, baby. What's fair is fair.
I give a quick glance to the back seat and spy a pillow. I grab it and grin. Putting it over my lap, I tug down my shorts. This is a fair exchange because my head was in the way. Now the pillow will be.
Fair point.
His hand slides under the pillow, and when he finds my sex, he says,
Someone was totally sexed up from that blowjob she just gave.
Of course I was.
Shit, would I like to slide into you right now?
Instead, two fingers move inside of me. He knows exactly how and where to put the pressure, but when he adds the motion to my clit with his thumb, it's not long before my orgasm bears down on me. When he pulls out, I hand him a tissue, and then I start laughing.
What's so funny?
He asks. It didn't take us long to have car sex on this trip. Gah, are we bad or what?
Just don't tell Jenna, because she'll tell Ben, and I'll never hear the end of it.
I'd never tell Jenna. The only way she'd find out would be if they saw us. Then a thought hits me. Oh shit, they're behind us. They're gonna figure it out with my head going down and all. Drew roars with laughter.
Yeah, you're right. They already know. I'm surprised they haven't called.
I know why. They're saving it for when we stop to eat. Drew and I share a glance, and we both know we're screwed. Sure enough, we stop for a late lunch, and Jenna gives us her rendition of what my head looked like from their car.
Damn, McKnight. Could you not at least wait until we got out of town? I mean, we were still in fucking traffic.
Ben teases.
Dude, who am I to turn down head? Truth.
Stop! My face burns, I'm sure. Your fault, my friend. Jenna rubs it in.
I'm not saying another word.
Drew pulls me into his side and kisses my temple.
Don't let him get to you, babe. It was the best.
I elbow him in the ribs before I even think. He winces and I immediately shrink away.
I'm good. Get back over here.
I hate myself when I forget and do crap like that. But maybe it's a good thing I can actually forget it all. It's after midnight when we finally pull into Charleston. I'll be staying with Drew tonight because we refuse to stay apart from one another. Tomorrow, I'll go home for 2 weeks while Drew returns to Indy, and then we'll move into our house that he bought for us when he moves back to Charleston. It'll give us time to get settled before our wedding, which is in 1 month. Letty and Ray greet us with hugs. We're beat, but I can't believe they stayed up.
Of course we stayed up. We haven't seen you two since what, March?
Letty says.
It was my surgery, Mom. You look wonderful, son.
Ray says.
I feel wonderful.
Drew says.
Are either of you hungry?
Drew decides to raid the fridge, and I snack on some of his findings. We chat with his parents for a bit, then head up to bed. When we dive into the bed, Drew pulls me close, and I'm almost asleep. I love the way he feels next to me. It's like I've just taken a sleeping pill.
Kate. I love you.
Oh, Drew, I love you too.
I know. Thank you for hanging with me.
I lift my head to look at him.
What do you mean?
Cancer is a big fucking ticket, Kate. Most girls would have run away as fast and as far as they could. But not you. You're here. And you act like you're still as excited as fuck about marrying me. Like I'm fucking gold.
Tears choke the air that I try to breathe and the words that I want to say right out of me. So I hold up my finger, indicating to him I have something to say. He knows I can't do it, so he nods. I wipe my eyes a few times and swallow, then say,
Listen to me, Drew, because I'm only going to tell you this once. I fell in love with you, and that includes the good times and bad. I'm not some shallow twit that runs when things go south. I'm in this relationship for the duration, like it or not. Now you can thank me for whatever, but don't you ever thank me for hanging with you. This is the real deal. When you love someone, this is what you do, and I love everything about you, Drew. The beautiful parts and the ugly parts, and that includes getting rid of the cancer.
I never thought I'd meet someone like you. I'm sorry you have to go through this.
What? He's the one going through it. Don't be sorry for me. I love you and wouldn't be anywhere else, nowhere else but with you.
The light that glows through his bedroom window lights up his eyes, and I can see the love shining in them. He traces the outline of my face, brows, lips, and then kisses me.
How did I ever luck out with you, beautiful Kate?
I can say the same for you, Drew. I think you're pretty damn phenomenal yourself. The truth is, I think they broke the mold after they made you.
Our house is damned awesome. It's a new 4-bedroom, 4-bath home in a great neighborhood in Mount Pleasant, a town across the river from Charleston. I was hesitant to buy something this large, but Drew insisted. He was so determined. I decided to go with it since it's his money. And I'm not gonna lie, this house rocks. Drew, both of our parents, Shannon, Eric, Jenna, and Ben come over to celebrate our first night. Well, it's not really our first night because we've been here for a few days, but we're finally unpacked and settled. We cook out and have a great dinner, relaxing with family and friends. With the wedding less than 2 weeks away, time seems to be flying by.
So any late additions to the wedding we need to worry about?
My mom asks.
Not that I'm aware of.
I answer. I pick up my dress tomorrow. Whatever you do, don't let Drew see it. It's bad luck. I know, Mom. He won't peek, I swear. I catch Jenna biting her lip, trying not to laugh. I want to throw a hamburger bun at her.
What can I see?
Drew asks.
My dress. I pick it up tomorrow.
Right. I won't peek. I'm not concerned about the dress, only what's hidden underneath it.
Letty gasps.
Drew McKnight, shame on you. A wedding gown is a bride's pride and joy.
Drew acts chastised, but I know better.
I'm sorry, babe. Clearly I wasn't thinking. I was only being an insensitive man.
I want to snort at that. It's okay. I'll think of a way you can make it up to me. The fact is, Drew really doesn't care about the gown, but once he sees me in it, he's gonna flip. It's gorgeous. It's not what you'd call a traditional-looking dress. It's a white silk halter dress that's sleek and body-skimming, making it very sexy. It has a lace cover-up that gives it a discreet look for the church ceremony. But for the reception, I'll remove the lace, and the dress then becomes much more revealing. At first, I was hesitant to buy it, even though I loved it and it looked awesome on. But Letty, Mom, and Jenna all persuaded me to go with it. They thought it was the dress. Drew's eyes will bug out when he sees that cover-up come off, and I can't wait.
What's that look for?
He asks. Oh, nothing.
Yeah, you've got something up your sleeve.
Jenna, Mom, and Letty all chuckle.
Did you all do something to me? Like booby-trap something of mine? I know how you girls are when you get together.
He says. Now we laugh even harder. No booby traps. Go on and get out of here. You need to hang with the guys and leave us to our girl talk. He leans down and kisses me.
Okay, but if you put dye in the shower head, someone's in for it.
Drew, why would we do that? I use that shower too.
I know, but you'd rig it just so and wait with a camera so you could catch me on video.
Kate, that's not a bad idea, Jenna says thoughtfully. Drew, you'd better get out of here before you give her any more ideas.
Oh, don't worry, she has plenty. Did she not ever tell you about the time she put saran wrap all over the toilets and bins in my apartment?
I look at Jenna with my brows raised. Jenna slaps her knee and starts telling the tale. We went to visit them for a football weekend. I knew they'd be drinking heavily, so I grabbed the saran wrap from their kitchen when no one was paying attention and covered their toilets. We left, and when they came home drunk that night, well, you can imagine. Ew, that's gross. I look at Letty and my mom. Their expressions are hilarious. We all start cracking up. Then Drew says,
What's so foul about it is we didn't even realize it until Ben started puking.
I hold up my hand. Stop, that's disgusting. Jenna is snorting and holding her stomach. Now the expressions on Letty's and Mom's faces are horrific. Thank God we finished eating. Then Jenna says, Dessert, anyone? We look at her, and now I really do pick up a hamburger bun and smack her in the head with it. The rest of the night goes from one story to the next until we can't laugh anymore. We sit outside on the deck, and I'm on Drew's lap as we tell our stories. What a great way to christen our new home. 10 days later, I walk down the aisle on my dad's arm as Drew waits to receive me, and I become Kate McKnight. It's the middle of June, and for Charleston, the weather couldn't be any better. It's 80 degrees with low humidity, which is actually cool for this time of year. The breeze is gentle, though it wouldn't really matter because all of our activities are indoors. Neither of us wanted to risk dealing with a chance of thunderstorms. As soon as I step into the aisle to make my way down to Drew, all I notice is him. Everything else fades away. The people, the beautiful flowers, the wedding party, and even my dad, who has been crying off and on for most of the day. When we get up to Drew, my dad hands me off, and I look into Drew's crystalline blue eyes as they gleam with happiness. His smile is radiant, and I want this picture of him to stay forever in my mind, this perfect image stamped eternally on my soul. His hand is warm as he takes mine, and his fingers fold over my shaky ones. He mouths the words, I love you, and it takes all I have not to kiss him. Then he mouths, I was wrong about the dress. That gets a giggle out of me. We turn and walk up to the altar. The Episcopal priest awaits us to perform the marriage ceremony, and I hand off my flowers to Jenna, who flashes me a toothy grin. It's funny about moments like this. You think you'd be so aware of every single thing, but the truth is, all I can think about is the man standing next to me. The priest talks about the importance of marriage and the closeness of friends and families, but I pray about Drew's health. I ask God, since we're in his house, to watch over Drew. I'm not a particularly religious person, though I do believe. But if ever there was goodness born on this earth, he is standing next to me. And I suppose that's what worries me the most about his cancer. I know that old saying, only the good die young, is just a saying. But maybe there is some truth in that. Maybe God really does need those good souls back in heaven with him. But don't we need them on earth too? My morbid thoughts, thankfully, are interrupted, because it's time for us to take our wedding vows.
We deliberated over writing our own, but we eventually settled on letting the priest use the traditional ones. But Drew surprises me. After I'm done with mine, and he says his, the priest looks at him and nods. Drew turns to me and says,
"Kate, Caitlin, I knew the day I saw you I was finished. You caught me, only you weren't aware."
He looks down and bites his lip for a beat. Then his head lifts, and his irises lock with mine. My heart feels like the wings of a hummingbird. One hand releases mine and cups my cheek.
"Oh, Kate, I hope to give you the world, and I'm gonna do my honest-to-God best. You could have run, but you didn't, which tells me everything. Now, I need to tell you everything."
The hand that was on my face grabs my free hand and places it on his chest.
"This is yours for as long as there are beats within it. Everything I have is yours. My love, my heart, my soul, and my life, for however short or long it may be."
I can't breathe. My face is wet, and the reason I know is he wipes my tears. Then he leans in and whispers,
"Breathe, Kate."
Breathe? I can't even swallow. Blink. I can blink. So I keep doing it, and he keeps wiping my eyes. Finally, the priest tells him to place the ring on my finger, and he says some other things. But his words have collapsed me. I need some time alone with him, like right now. Why did he do this to me? Here. The priest announces that we're Dr. and Mrs. Drew Stanford McKnight, and we walk down the aisle. As soon as we get to the back of the church, he pulls me into one of the side rooms. We were going there anyway to hide from the crowd, so we could take more pictures afterward. There is a bathroom in there, and I drag him behind me, close and lock the door, and start sobbing.
"Jesus, Kate, I didn't think."
I throw myself at him and just cry. I need this moment to purge this out of me. "Just hold me," I say. My tears run dry, and I pull away. "A little warning would have been good."
"I guess so."
He looks chastened.
"I'm sorry. I wanted you to know how deeply I feel, so I thought..." "Enough said. I love you. You know how I feel. I won't keep putting my damn foot in my mouth."
"Drew, everything I have is yours too. You know that, but your words were so unexpected."
"I know, and I was wrong about not caring about your dress. You are the most beautiful thing I've ever laid these dumb old eyes on."
He kisses me.
"I couldn't believe how stunning you were, standing at the end of the aisle. You are a vision."
"You think so?"
"Yes. Now let's get you fixed up again so you don't look like you've been crying. I'm sorry I made you cry, babe."
He sounds so disheartened. "You can make it up to me."
"I plan on it."
My makeup bag is in here, so I go to work touching up my eyes. It's not that bad because I'm wearing waterproof everything. "How do I look?"
"Like a princess."
I roll my eyes.
"You do. Better than any princess I've ever seen. You're gorgeous, Kate. And best of all, you're my wife."
He kisses me again. Someone knocks on the door. "Hey, you okay in there?" It's Jenna. "Yeah." And I open the door. "Oh, God, don't tell me y'all were... I told you he'd go crazy over that dress and..." I cut her off when I see Shannon standing there. "That's enough, Miss Nosy." Drew grins and winks at me and leads me out of the bathroom. Then the photographer grabs us and it's all about the pictures for a while. We take the church shots and then the outdoor shots. And I'm glad because it takes my mind off of everything else. The reception is a hit. Two things Drew and I insisted on during the planning stages were a big band and a huge bar with anything and everything anyone wanted to drink. The rest, we really didn't give a damn about. We figured we wanted a party where everyone danced and had a great time, and the way to do that was with an awesome band and great drinks. We have succeeded. People keep telling us this is the best wedding reception they've ever attended. My feet will be killing me tomorrow, but I couldn't care less. Drew and I fly out on Monday to wherever his secret honeymoon is. I won't be walking anywhere far, I'm sure. We don't leave the party until the very end, and I hate to say goodbye to all our friends, but I'm eager to get to our hotel. We're staying in a suite in one of the hotels right here in downtown Charleston. A horse and carriage await to take us to our room. When we walk in, a bottle of champagne sits in a bucket of ice, and Drew and I look at each other and make faces. The last thing we either want or need is more alcohol.
You know what I'd love right now?
He asks. A wedding night blowjob?
Well, that too, but I'm starving. I didn't eat but a bite or two. I'd love a pizza.
Oh, me too. I'm famished myself. He grins, grabs the phone, and starts ordering all this food from room service. Why didn't you order a pizza delivery?
I wanted variety, and I'll have my blowjob for dessert. They're bringing a can of whipped cream because I ordered strawberries.
They are not. He looks like that little boy again.
Yes, they are.
Sure enough, when the room service man arrives, pushing a cart laden with our food, there is a can of whipped cream on it. But I don't see any strawberries. I ask Drew about it. He's a bit tipsy.
Oh, that's right. I ordered brownie cake instead.
That's even better. We dive into the array of food, from pizza to burgers, fries, and chicken wings, until we're stuffed.
Don't forget the dessert.
Drew reminds me. Oh, you can have the brownie thingy. I have something else in mind. I crawl between his legs, tug his boxers down with a little help from him, take that can of whipped cream, and make an artful creation out of his cock. He'd started eating the brownie, but after a bite got very distracted by what I was doing. You like? I ask.
I love.
He has his husky, sexy voice going now. I eye his whipped cream-covered cock, trying to decide if I should start at the top or the bottom when he says,
No hands.
Huh?
Don't use your hands. Mouth only.
Is that a challenge?
Not really. I just want to watch you suck me off with your hands behind your back.
Can I touch Louise?
Oh, no. Only I get to touch Louise.
Well, then, I'd better hurry it up, because Louise is getting impatient. I dip my head down and lick the tip of his cock, swirling my tongue about the tip, sucking off the cream. Yummy, I love this.
Kate, stop teasing.
I notice his hands clenching the table. No teasing, just sucking. And I go back to work. This really is tasty. Lick, swirl, suck until all the cream is gone. And now I take him deep. He groans loudly. And I want this to go fast because I need some relief too. But he has other ideas.
Enough.
He pulls me to my feet and lays me down on the coffee table, pulling off my thong. It's a sexy white satin number. Once I'm bared to him, he takes that can of whipped cream and coats my pussy with it.
My turn.
Then his tongue starts lapping up the cream as he murmurs his pleasure. I'm thinking we'll have to buy this stuff by the case.
Whipped cream is good, but it doesn't taste nearly as good as you, Kate.
My legs are spread, and my feet rest on his shoulders. When he spears me with two fingers, I cry out, Ugh!
You want this?
No, I want you.
That can be arranged, but I want an orgasm from you first.
And he gets it. Or rather, he gets two. Then he pulls my hand, and I'm back on my feet. He picks me up, carries me to the bed, and proceeds to make love to me. It's slow, drawn out, and perforates my heart in a way I'm sure he doesn't intend it to. But his words, for however short or long it may be, keep coming back to me. This moment has to last forever in my heart. I don't want to feel this way, to have these doubts. I want my faith to be firm in his survival of what he faces. So I will choose to live in the moment from this point on, cherishing him day by day, hour by hour, minute by minute. The honeymoon destination is the island of St. Martin. When we land at the airport, our driver greets us. Where are we going? I ask.
You'll see in just a little bit.
When we pull up to a private villa, Drew says,
Surprise.
Then he leans over and kisses my cheek.
This is our home for the next 10 days.
This is amazing.
Let's check it out.
Our driver unloads our bags,
while a woman greets us and shows us around. The villa sits right on its own private beach, but has a pool and every amenity one could want. The woman, whose name is Monique, tells us, "Every morning breakfast will be delivered at 7. We will leave it outside so we won't disturb you if you are still sleeping." She beams, and her face lights up, letting us know she has an inkling we'll be hanging out in bed a lot. "Then I will return at 12:30 to deliver your lunch. You will leave me your order, yes, in the morning on the porch when I deliver your breakfast?" We nod. Apparently, there is a huge menu we get to choose from. Monique isn't finished. "Then at 6 in the evening, our chef Pierre will arrive to cook you dinner if you are dining in. Again, you must give me your dinner selection at lunch so chef can be prepared, yes?" We nod again. "You will find everything you need in the villa, and if you don't, you just call Monique, yes?" We nod again. Then she leaves, and we grin at each other. "True, this is amazing."
"I hope you love it."
"I do. How did you find this place?"
"Oh, this little thing called the internet. And my parents."
When our first breakfast is delivered the next morning, it consists of homemade breads and croissants, because we're staying on the French side of the island, and everything is mouthwatering. It's a good thing I don't have to worry about fitting into my wedding gown anymore, because after all this tasty food, I'm sure it would be very snug. Our views from the beach are stunning. We have a spectacular sunset to witness every night right off our terrace, so we usually sit out here with a glass of wine and take in the gorgeous scenery. One night, as we sit together holding hands, something pops into my head. "Hey, I thought you said you didn't want anyone seeing me naked, remember?"
"Yeah, I said that to throw you off, so you wouldn't be able to figure out where we were going."
"Really, Drew? I never would have guessed this place in a gazillion years. You outdid yourself."
"Nah, I outdid myself when I found you."
"Promise me something." There's urgency in my voice, and he hears it because he sits up straighter and leans forward in his chair. Taking my hand, he says,
"Anything, babe. What is it?"
"Promise me you will fight this thing with everything you have, because honestly, I don't want to think about this world without you in it." I'm not sure if it's the alcohol or what, but big fat tears power their way out, and I can do nothing to stop them. And this is the part I hate the worst. I'm the one who should be strong. I'm the one who should be comforting him, pushing him on. But no, he pulls me into his lap, and he's my strength. His hands rub a path up and down my back while he whispers things to me. I have no idea what they are. When the tears ebb enough for me to speak, I ask, "Is there anything you're holding back? Anything you're keeping from me?"
"No, Kate. I'm telling you everything, and we'll always do that."
"Okay. I'm sorry I fell apart."
"Why are you sorry? You're scared. I'm scared. I don't know how long I'm gonna live."
"Don't say that."
"It's true, Kate, but none of us do. Hell, we could die in a plane crash on the way home. Realistically, we won't, but the fact is we all face death. It's the circle of life. I see it at work all the time, so I think I'm a bit more practical about it than you."
"I can't let myself think that way. You're young and strong enough to beat it."
"That's what I'm hoping for. But Kate, if I don't..."
"Stop it, Drew. I don't want to hear that." He nods and presses his lips together. I guess he knows I've had enough of this talk. We sit for the rest of the night, me on his lap, watching the night sky over the sea. I know this talk is prophetic, or at least it's Drew's way of trying to prepare me if the worst happens. Only I don't let myself get prepared, but I'm not sure anyone really can. Chapter 25, Present. The forced smile on my face is plastered there. I remember the times going out with friends who really didn't want to be with me, but would rather be hanging out with their hot boyfriends. Now I have a hot boyfriend that I'd rather be home with. But it's okay to hang out with friends, I tell myself. I can practically hear Jenna saying that I don't have to spend every waking moment with Drew. "Kate, what's wrong? You've gone pale." I blink. "Sorry, nothing." I recall I have asked Andy nothing about his health, In fact, I should schedule my annual physical. Survival rate of anything improves the sooner it's found. Then I chide myself. Andy knows better than the rest of us to take care of himself. I won't ask him. He'll think I'm babying him. Kate, I glance up. You're not even in the room. I'm telling you about Daniel. Her lips poke out, and I feel bad. Sorry, Mandy, I just have a lot on my mind. Yeah, that hot doctor. You've never really told me about how you know him, where you met. What's the story?
The story. It's complicated.
There is no way I can explain the convoluted nature of our relationship. Mandy, however, folds her arms over her chest, and I sigh.
He's from Charleston, like me, I toss out, like that explains everything.
She nods, and I'm glad she's accepted the simple truth of Andy and my origins. Obviously, things are going well. You'd rather be out with him than me. I open my mouth to protest, and a male voice speaks instead.
Excuse me.
We look up from the leatherette sofa we've commandeered to turn to face a man in a suit, with dark hair and eyes staring hard at Mandy while leaning on the back of one of the chairs in front of us.
Can I buy you ladies a drink?
I'm about to say no, but Mandy beats me to it. Yes, yes, you can. The wattage on her smile has turned to supernova levels. He's quite handsome, and the way the suit fits him like a glove spells expensive and not off the rack.
We're actually having wine, Mandy explains.
The man raises a finger to a waitress walking by.
Can you bring the ladies a bottle of Domaine Vacheron 2012 Le Romain Sauvignon Blanc?
Mandy lifts her eyebrow because the wine he's ordered isn't cheap. Not to mention he rattles it off in perfect French. Then again, the bar and lounge Mandy has chosen is frequented by nearby professionals and up-and-coming lawyers. He takes a seat in the chair that he'd been leaning on. It's one of two high-back chairs on the opposite side of a small table that separates us. Unfortunately for me, he glances to the bar and waves over a friend, who makes his way over and takes the chair across from me.
I'm Jared, and this is my friend Scott.
Mandy is too pleased and is quick to reciprocate with our names. I'm Mandy, and this is Kate. We exchange nods, and Mandy and Jared start to make conversation. It leaves me and Scott to entertain ourselves. Scott is kind of cute. He's a ginger with a warm smile, someone I might have dated if I wasn't already involved. The key words being, I'm involved, and I don't want to have to explain that to him. It always makes the situation weird, because most guys think women use that as an excuse when we aren't interested.
So, what do you do?
Scott asks a little awkwardly. I'm flattered he's a little nervous. It only makes him that much cuter, but he's not Andy.
Kate, Mandy.
We both glance up to find Daniel. Mandy's eyes widen before they narrow. I feel a little giddy because this is the distraction I need. Sit and join us. Then I glance at the two guys ready to make introductions. This is Daniel and Tammy, the redhead receptionist supplies. And this is Jared and Scott, I announce. There is only a place on the sofa next to me and another chair left in the little grouping. Daniel sits on the sofa and Tammy takes the chair next to Scott. The waitress with superb timing shows up with our wine, so Jared offers them a glass.
Guinness, please,
Daniel orders instead. Tammy accepts the wine. The waitress is forced to go and get another glass. Jared and Scott order a couple of fingers of scotch, and we all sit there until Mandy blurts out, Daniel, weren't you working late tonight? I thought you had a project to complete. Music plays softly in the background, but the few seconds of silence is deafening with Mandy's accusatory statement. Daniel shoots back.
It's not due until Tuesday, but thanks for your concern. I'm sure my boss will appreciate your diligence in making sure I meet my deadlines.
Talk about awkward. Jared and Scott glance away as if not to watch the train wreck happening. So, Jared, do you and Scott work together? I interject, trying to break the tension Mandy and Daniel have created. Jared's face smooths out. He begins to speak about the law firm he works for and a pro bono case he and Scott just wrapped up. The case is about a girl with a disease that causes bad seizures who would benefit from the use of medical marijuana. Mandy, who practically leans into Jared's lap, hangs onto his every word. I stay quiet, because I know how helpful it can be, especially when it comes to pain management and nausea, but there is no way I'm talking about it. I'm sure if Andy were here, he would have a lot to add to the conversation, and with an MD behind his name, they would be hard-pressed not to listen. Daniel's jaw is tight, and I watch as the tension between the two starts to build again. Isn't medical marijuana legal in DC now? Mandy asks. Jared nods.
It is. However, this case is across the Potomac in Northern Virginia.
Thankfully, that starts a conversation about how everyone feels on the subject. Views strongly vary one way or another, and it relieves some of the strain. I'm half listening, but I pull out my phone, hoping for a text from Andy. It's still early, and I have nothing. Scott makes a move and asks to switch seats with Daniel. I sigh, knowing I'm gonna have to give him the brush off. I hate doing that. It's insulting to him, and it's embarrassing for me. I know how hard the dating scene is. Just as Scott plants himself next to me, Mandy shoves an elbow in my side. I glare at her until she shifts her eyes somewhere off in the distance. I slowly turn and see what it means. Andy's friend, the Thor lookalike, has just walked in, with Mitch tagging behind him. Andy isn't with them as they sit around one of the only free tables left. I glance at my phone and try not to let jealous and crazy thoughts muck up my head. There are a number of reasons Andy might not be with them like he said he would be, and I don't think in a million years he's cheating on me. So I finish my wine, and Scott graciously pours me some more. Points scored for being a gentleman. It's too bad I'm not on the hunt for someone. Scott asks some questions, and I oblige him by answering. I even ask him questions to be polite, as the legality of marijuana debate continues with the rest of our group.
You keep checking your phone. Are you waiting for someone to call?
It couldn't have been a better segue if I had said it myself. Scott's given me the opening I need to tell him I have a boyfriend without looking like a complete bitch. Only right then, the screen on my phone flashes. Andy.
You look like you're having fun. Should I be jealous?
I glance up over to Andy's friend's table. He's there smiling in my direction, and I feel a grin fill my face as I type. Me. No, but I'm in need of a rescue. Will you come and save me? I glance up, intending to look at Andy again, but Scott is there waiting patiently for my response. Yes, I am, I say, just as my phone vibrates again. Andy.
IDK. I think it's interesting to watch some guy try and fail to pick up my girl.
I frantically type another message, ignoring Scott completely. Me. I'm a nice girl. I may give him a shot on principle. In fact, it's rude of me to text to you while I'm talking to him. I make a show of turning off my phone and putting it in my purse. I'm sorry, I say sweetly to Scott. That was rude of me. It's so wrong and unfair to Scott, but it makes me giddy to tease Andy. I'm curious to see what his next move will be.
Was it someone important?
Scott asks. I opened my mouth and words come out, except I'm not saying them.
Yeah, sorry, man.
His sexy voice makes my spine tingle. Andy leans over and snags my hand. He draws me to my feet and up against him. Then he plants the hottest kiss on my lips. People around us start to make lewd comments. He draws back, letting his hands slide down my back and over my ass before dropping away.
You have to know it's not nice to tease,
he says in my ear. Grinning, I say, we know the importance your mother places on good manners. He shakes his head.
We can discuss when I get to your place.
Promises, promises. Mandy clears her throat. I turn to the group. Sorry, everyone, this is my boyfriend, Drew. I purposely don't call him Andy, because I know everyone calls him Drew. Then I rattle off everyone's name and end with Scott, who doesn't seem angry, but maybe a little confused. Are you going to join us? Mandy asks.
I would, but I'm here with friends, and Kate's here with you.
She and I will see each other later.
His eyes are dark on mine, and I feel the heat smolder between us. I'm sure everyone else feels it too.
However, I am gonna borrow her for a second.
He glances at Mandy, and she nods. Taking my hand, he walks me over to his friends, and I get a sober view of Dave.
Mitch, you know Kate.
Andy begins. Mitch tips a glass in my direction.
You haven't yet met Dave. Dave, this is Kate.
Dave stands in all his California dream and glory. His hair is that pale blonde people call sun-bleached, or the luck of the gene pool. His eyes are a midnight blue, or so they look in the dim light of the bar. His chiseled face could easily grace the cover of any magazine. His bear hug is brotherly, and he looks over my face and pronounces,
I can see why Drew is so smitten with you. I think I could settle down if I found a woman who has your beauty.
You're too sweet, I say.
So they say,
he says and chuckles. His smile is sly and sexy as hell. If I'd been single, I would have drooled all over him.
And he's lying. Dave will never settle, at least not with a chick.
Mitch says offhandedly. Dave glares at him.
Don't worry, I already told her all about you and your antics.
Dave shrugs and sits casually back in his chair. Andy shakes his head before kissing me again for good measure.
I should send you back to Scott. He looks like he wants an explanation.
A quick glance over, and I see Scott's eyes glance away. A sigh. I never let him on.
Sure you didn't,
Mitch says, dragging out the words in a flippant manner. Maybe if you'd get laid, you wouldn't be so grumpy. I retort. Dave snorts, and Andy laughs. Mitch only glares at me, so I stick my tongue out at him. Somehow I know I can get away with this, considering what he said to me during our first meeting.
She obviously knows you well, my friend.
Dave banters.
Oh yeah, we're BFFs. Isn't that right, princess?
Mitch asks, a smile playing on his lips. You wish, hotshot. I call back to him. Andy taps my butt.
Go get him, Tagger.
I shake my head, chuckling, but turn in the direction of my table. As the night wears on, Scott is gracious, and we end up talking politics, of all things. Daniel and Mandy trade unfriendly stares to the point they don't notice when Jared starts talking to another girl from our office who has showed up with a few other people. Daniel's redhead and Scott get in a heated debate about the upcoming election when things start to wind down. I finally stand as our group begins to break apart. Are you ready to go? I ask Mandy. She nods. We wave our goodbyes as Mandy takes a hold of my arm. You have to introduce me to Thor first, she says, close to my ear. I sigh, because I know Mandy's into Daniel and he's into her. I wave Daniel goodbye as he watches us make our way over to Andy's table. A few girls are standing there, basking in the guy's hotness. One of them leaves Dave's side to make her way over to Andy and flutters her eyelashes. It reminds me of my college days when I would sit and watch the hot guys I was with, friend or more, get hit on by waitresses. I tamp those memories down and bring myself back to the here and now. Before I move to introduce Mandy, she grabs my arm and shakes her head. Now I understand. Considering the PDA display Andy did to me earlier, I assume he'll forgive me for what I'm about to do next. Casually, I step over and turn to conveniently trip and fall into Andy's lap. I flutter my own lashes and end up blinking a little too hard and start to laugh. Sorry, I'm such a klutz. Andy chuckles as he has me figured out. With a wide smile, he dips his head to kiss me.
Subtle, Kate,
Mitch says. Catching a glimpse of the flirtatious girl, I notice she now suffers from fake eyelash paralysis. The girl's fake eyelashes freeze wide open as her face sours.
Sorry, ladies, we aren't interested. Tonight.
Dave says to the other girls. Out of his mouth, the dismissive words seem thoughtful and sweet. He is good. The women walk away, wondering if they should be offended or flattered.
Kate, who is this tasty morsel you've brought over for us to sample?
Dave asks with a wink. But it's Mitch's eyes that are glued to Mandy as if she were the Greek goddess Aphrodite. Interesting. Mandy, this is Mitch and Dave. Mandy barely gives Mitch a passing glance as she beams at Dave. Dave smiles back, looking very used to the attention. Daniel walks by and snags Mandy's shoulder. Can I talk to you? She nods and holds up a finger for me to give her a minute before she walks away. I can't imagine being Mandy right now. I'm not sure how all of it will play out, considering both Dave and Mitch watch her walk to Daniel. Tammy stands alone, looking uncomfortable while the two talk.
Are you going home?
Andy asks. I nod. I'll see you later, right? Andy doesn't answer. He turns to his friends.
Dave, Mitch.
Andy says, gaining his friends' attention. When they shift their eyes, he says,
I'm calling it a night. Don't blame you. And Kate, if Drew treats you bad, call me. I know how to make it better.
Dave winks. I laugh, because I can only imagine.
Dude, she calls him Andy.
Mitch says with a chuckle. If Mitch and I hadn't packed things up, I might have gotten mad. I know him better now, and he uses words like a Marine in combat. Don't worry, Dave. If Drew and I have problems, I know to sick Mitch after him. Mandy walks up then with a shell-shocked expression. Are you ready? I ask cautiously. She nods and glances back to Daniel, who is busy helping his date get into her coat, with his eyes firmly on Mandy. Andy will give you a ride, I say, because I know he will. Mitch, who somewhere in all this has gotten up, says,
I'm sure, Andy.
He glances at me as his mouth twitches.
And Kate wants some alone time. Dave and I can see her home.
I silently ask Mandy what she thinks. Her face brightens as Dave saunters over.
We'll make sure she gets home.
When he says it, it sounds salacious. Go on, Kate, I'll be fine. I shake my head. When I turn, Andy has my coat. I get into it as Dave and Mitch give Mandy the princess treatment. After we leave, I ask Andy, should I be afraid? He laughs.
They're harmless. They won't do anything she isn't on board for. Enough about them, they're adults. With you so close, but not close enough for me to touch, I've been hard all night. I think I have blue balls.
As we walk through the underground parking lot to get to his car, I slyly ask, you're the doctor. Do your balls actually turn blue? You tell me if you have blue balls.